Before we begin, everyone do me a favor.
Thanks.
Read a little thing I wrote called the Federalist Papers.
Yeah.
I explain how a nation's unlikely to survive without a strong central government to keep it alive. When I lost the central bank, Jefferson called me ill. Now you have my faith to thank on every $10 bill. When America was cash-strapped, I pushed past that. Now some sickle makes crypto, and our nation backtracks.
Decentralized currency, yes, I invented it. I'm sure many governments wish they had prevented it. The national cash is how they keep control. But freedom to the people was my ultimate goal. Am I a synonym, a group of men? It doesn't even matter.
Nope.
I invented Bitcoin because fiat is a disaster. A man from Japan or a damn hologram. I'm the reason open season on crypto began.
Welcome to Tokens Radio Show. It's Sunday, March 3rd. My name's Christy.
And I'm Linda Kitt.
I'm Elizabeth.
And Lauren's away on assignment. We hope he gets home safely. He's coming over the pass today.
That's a safe way to say he's playing around. No, but we hope he comes home safe.
Yes, indeed. We're broadcasting live from the studios at KCNR in Redding, California on both 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. And you can also stream us online at KCNR1460.com to catch today's show and access our archives. Follow us on Telegram and X for updates at Tokens Radio Show. And we have our talented producer, Christina, who's behind the scenes today.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, my dear.
How are you, ladies?
We're great.
You?
I'm doing wonderful. Enjoying, actually, the weather, rain.
You like the rain?
Yes, I do. I love it.
It's a bit cold for me.
But, you know, it's good for the nature, and I understand how the lakes are filling up, and everything will be greenish.
Oh, the lake is full.
That's exactly what I was interested in.
Gosh, I wanted to see the glory hole. That's an amazing
sight.
Oh,
out of Whiskey Town.
Yeah, and it's especially
glory hole?
Yes, and did you get to see the upper half of the dam get open? That's an incredible sight.
Okay, I'm checking right now.
Yeah, check it out. Well, did you know that we're going to have Bo on from Abundant Minds today? He's going to be our guest. But before we bring him on, let's do a quick market update. Currently, Bitcoin's at 62,723. IBIT shares is $35.99. That's gone up quite a bit.
Get out there.
Ethereum is at $34.68. That's also been on a trajectory.
Unbelievable.
XRP is at 62 cents, and XLM is at 13. That's finally moved a little bit.
Yeah, XRP has moved up a little bit as well.
Well, it was sitting there. Yeah, that's right. Right around 50 cents there for a while. It's been inching up.
All right, well, today's show is sponsored by the Queen of Dragons, home to Pinnacle Cultivators. Their careful, cultivated, unique strands offer elevated experience with exotic genetics and robust flavors. The Queen of Dragons is known for fair pricing, stringent quality and control, and knowledgeable staff. And they're very friendly and nice over there.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they are.
Stay connected by following at Queen's Dragons on X or calling 530-276-9771.
That's terrific. Now, if you'd like to join in on our conversation today, give the station a call at 530-605-4567 or hit us up in the chat at KCNR1460.com. We're going to be welcoming Bo here in just a couple of minutes. We'll wait for him to call in. But, my gosh, the market has just been on fire, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Smells like a bull market.
Well, we had kissed 67,000 in Bitcoin, and we pulled back. That's exciting.
Just to even have it in the 60s, I'm like, oh, my goodness, it's happening.
It's like, we told you so.
Yeah.
I know. I love it. My percentage is going ching, 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 ching up. So you know?
Keep on hodling. This was a test.
Did you read the article by James Lavish where he was talking about risk-reward? I know he has it linked in X. I get his email, but he was basically talking about, the probability. I mean, some of the statistics he was doing and calculations. He goes, we could do, an 80% pullback. That has been known to happen in Bitcoin. But yet we can easily go to 100,000.
Yeah.
It could easily be $1 million a coin. So, but he's on the bullish side, of course, and that's always exciting for us, us Bitcoiners and our us maxis.
Right. And I mean, the value or the price that it could go to, I mean, it could go to anything.
Mm.
Yeah. You know, if you stop and
think. Stay tuned.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, with the other economies and other things in our world,
yeah.
depending how they evolve or don't evolve or fall or whatever, what that does to Bitcoin.
Yeah, I think right now we're just at a point where everyone is just getting to witness the scarcity side of it.
That's
just
true.
Become very real, where before we're just like, there's only 21 million, and now we're really seeing everyone trying to, just the big investment firms and things purchase it.
I would say that we have a call. Excuse me, coming in, and that's going to be our guest on the line.
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
Do we want to talk about him a little bit or introduce him a little bit?
Well, let's just wait and see if he's here before we...
Okay.
Well, we have Bo on the line, so we want to welcome Bo, the founder of Bitcoin mining hosting company, Abundant Minds, to the Tokens Radio Show. He's passionate about Bitcoin's potential to empower individuals through portable, unconfiscatable wealth. Bo started Abundant Minds after struggling to find good hosting options for his own miners. He has degrees in both engineering and information systems, and he entered the crypto space in 2015, but persevered through early scams and losses before launching his company. Boy, we can all appreciate that.
Yep.
Bo believes Bitcoin mining can create environmental benefits by using waste resources, fulfilling his vision to realize mining's transformative potential. We look forward to hearing Bo share more about his entrepreneurial journey and the latest with Abundant Minds on today's program. Welcome, Bo.
Are you
there? Thank you for that introduction.
Hey, good to hear your voice again.
From Bend, Oregon. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes.
I can hear you good now.
Absolutely. So we're here with Linda.
I'm Linda.
And Elizabeth.
Hi, Bo.
Lauren is...
Lauren's
up in Oregon somewhere trying to get through the pass, so he's not going to be here today.
No.
But in any case, we're so thankful and grateful to have you here today, Bo.
Yeah,
Thank you.
I'm very excited about this show and learning more about this and picking your brain, so to speak. So,
well,
where
absolutely.
Do we want to start?
Well, I'm here to answer any questions you guys have. I'm happy to be interrupted through anything, but I mean, generally, I can talk about my journey. I could talk a little bit about how Abundant Minds got started, and specifically, I think there's maybe some we want to touch on for your local area in Shasta County.
That would be great.
Those are the three highlights. Why don't we go ahead and start off about a little bit about you and how you got into this industry and how Abundant Minds was launched?
Absolutely. Well, for my part, I came into Bitcoin and Ethereum at the time, around 2015, and I was an engineering student, so it was just kind of a curiosity for me. I didn't have any inkling that it might be a future career path, but it interested me, and I thought it was really compelling kind of technology that could bring freedom to a lot of different circumstances. And so I at least bought some at that period. I won't say that I fully understood what I owned for several more years, but tried and failed to get into mining in various ways, one of which was just trying to host with another colocation company in Sweden that folded pretty quickly, and I don't think any of the investors got any of their, most of their principal paid back. But I built and ran a real estate company out of college, and so I kind of turned my attention away from the crypto and Bitcoin industry broadly for several years. And then had a move in 2021 up to the Pacific Northwest. So I was previously living in Texas. And it just gave me the space to really consider what I was spending my time and energy on. And the more time that I spent researching Bitcoin, the less of anything else I seemed to own as the weeks went on. And so that was about 2021 when I moved to the Pacific Northwest. And we started mining commercially with Abundant Minds in 2022. So it was a pretty quick transition from selling anything other than Bitcoin to realizing that if I wanted to get Bitcoin far into the future and all these ETFs, you know, at the time the ETFs weren't around, but if everybody wants some and nobody wants to sell it, how else are we going to get it?
Right.
And so Bitcoin mining was the path that I chose to try and stack more, because as soon as I realized what I was looking at, I couldn't stand to sit on the sidelines and not participate and look back 30 years from now and realize that I was still looking at this stuff when there was 10% or more of supply floating around.
Yeah, exactly. That's an amazing story. How did you land on the location? You're in Cascade Locks, right?
Correct. So our flagship site's about 45 minutes from Portland. I personally live in Bend, and we have a couple of sites here, but that's our main facility. And the way that we landed on it was actually that the leader of our technical team has been mining since 2013, and I met him at a facility tour for a public company up in Washington. And we just really hit it off, and I got a chance to come back and see his existing facility there. And there was seemingly an opening where the utility didn't have much of a prospect for economic development or any kind of use of their existing infrastructure. And so we came in and offered an alternative use for essentially what they had already built out for. And through us coming into the town, you know, it's a very small utility, and so they don't necessarily get the best rates when they're purchasing raw energy on contracts from VPA. And so by having something like us, a large flexible load to come into your utility, we figured that we would have the most impact on them versus, you know, a utility like Portland General Electric or some of these larger utilities. We're barely a speck in the context of their load. But in Cascade Locks, we are, even at our starting size of 3 megawatts, we're already the size of the entire existing system before we came in. And so there's an opportunity for us to not just give them economic growth, but really perform load balancing services and give them another lever in how they control their energy procurement and use strategy.
Did you find difficulty dealing with their government?
You know, in our case, they welcomed us with open arms. They were initially skeptical, of course, and I think that's totally reasonable, especially considering many of the fly-by-night operators that came along in 2018 and just kind of flooded places like Washington and New York.
Right.
But once we had a few meetings with them and described what we were doing, you know, if you can explain that you're really no different than a standard data center that would be setting up in their territory and that the only difference is what's happening inside of your computers, it's a little bit more palatable for them.
Right. That makes complete sense. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm just curious, too, what did that process look like for you guys? So you went to the government, you had several meetings. Can you walk us through that?
Absolutely. So when you're setting up a site, there's a couple of key things that you need. What the two main ones are just power and space.
Mm-hmm.
And in our case, we needed to make sure that there was enough capacity at the city substation, which is their main point of distribution for power. So the first thing that you're typically doing is you're doing a load study on any of the existing equipment in the city, figuring out that if they have the capacity for you to start with. The second part of that is if you are going to be a new large load in a utility and they don't have a rate schedule to handle you or the rate schedule that's existing doesn't work, you have to go and create your own. And so in our case, the standard rate tariff works as is, but we're working on the process with the city utility to design a rate that not only benefits us as miners, but benefits the utility as well mm-hmm. for taking advantage of the unique things that miners do, like being able to cut off at any time. And so once you know that the energy is there, the second part is just making sure that you have the appropriate zoning. So typically mining has to be, at any kind of scale, needs to be done in a commercial or industrial zone, and that is the case for our site. We're in a 20-acre industrial property that is the property of some heavy industrial contractors, and we just have a small slice, like less than a quarter of an acre on that property. And those are the two main components. But as long as you've got a supportive community behind you, you come in and explain what you're doing, it's no different. You don't need any special permits in addition to what any other user would get. The issue is when miners try to go through and set up their businesses without getting the appropriate permits and following the procedures that any other business would have to follow.
Yeah, that's always a problem. Yeah, if they have catches up to you.
I have to create more of a partnership with the people mm-hmm. and the cities or the people you're dealing with instead of, you know, trying to
like, circumvent.
Yeah, circumvent their process and make it different.
I think much of the misconception, too, around our industry is that people view mining as an extractive industry, mm-hmm. that we're coming yes. and we're taking energy and we're using yes. resources that otherwise could go to something else. And if I can educate people about anything, it's just that is completely untrue, mm-hmm. and that mining is an energy resource, and it gives grids, it gives utilities, and it gives generators the flexibility to make additional decisions with what they do with their energy. And I think as soon as utilities, as soon as public commissions start seeing mining more as a resource than as a business coming and trying to take their resources, we're going to move the ball forward very quickly.
Agreed. Yeah, because I think a lot of them, to start with, do look at it that way, that you're becoming more of a competition for them until they realize exactly how it works and what Bitcoin mining has to offer for the community.
Exactly. It's in my opinion, it's one of the most misunderstood forces for good in our world today is Bitcoin mining and its interaction with energy.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, because I know in the beginning I thought it was, you know, we were told or led to believe how bad it was for the environment and everything. All the bad things to start with. So sometimes you have you perceive it automatically when you first hear the term
yeah.
Bitcoin mining.
There was definitely a foundation of FUD. So we like to talk about the fear, uncertainty, and doubt laid out around this. But I'm just so thankful for you, Bo, and people like you who are just kind of setting the record straight and showing how this is actually helping build community.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, you guys are part of the educational force. I mean, just as challenging as Bitcoin itself is to explain to someone truthfully and with any degree of efficacy, you have to be able to spend the time to explain something like Bitcoin mining that not only is hard to understand, but is the only part of the Bitcoin network that interacts with our physical world. And so it's the first line of defense for the network. But it's yeah. also what most people have exposure to and that they've heard of and that takes physical resources. So it's in a sense, a battleground of the mind for people that are concerned about resource use. And, you know, I started out in my early college career wanting to be something like an environmentalist or a sustainability engineer. Mm-hmm. And the peak irony of my life right now is that in fulfilling that purpose, the perfect tool was getting into Bitcoin mining.
Yeah, indeed.
Yes.
That's cool. It's though. An industry that continues to innovate mm-hmm. and improve and find ways to use It's using resources, but also providing resources as well. I can think of a couple of examples that we talked about here on the radio show. Just one of them, I thought this was very clever, was, what was it, a bathhouse in New York.
And, oh, yeah, yeah.
And he was running Bitcoin miners, of course, you know, generating some Bitcoin opportunities for him. He was part of a mining pool. And he had his miners submerged in mm-hmm. Water that did not conduct electricity. But the miners were warming the water, and the water was being pumped through the building into the baths. And so the miners were actually heating the bath water. Wasn't that cool?
Yeah.
It's
a huge thing.
Yes, it's huge. And you hear this with people using it for swimming pools. What was one of the other examples that we had there?
Wasn't there one about a greenhouse? They were somehow
recapturing
some of our friends in Idaho, GeoBitMine is their company. They have, I believe it's a 3-megawatt facility that's hooked up to a greenhouse, that's mm-hmm. several-acre greenhouse. And they provide waste heat so that they can grow fresh fruit and other produce throughout the winter.
Right. That's just amazing how they do that and what good it does for the environment and everything.
Yeah. So, Bo, what does Abundant Minds look like 10 years from now?
Mm-hmm. Oof.
Put your futuristic goggles on.
You know, this industry moves so quickly. Mm-hmm. I was actually speaking with someone on the phone earlier. I said, I can't even see 6 months ahead of me right now. Mm-hmm. It's truly that quick and that crazy with how much things are changing just in terms of perception and the kinds of capital pools that are coming into our industry is something that I, even though I knew was coming for years, I don't think really any of us are emotionally prepared for when it starts to hit. So I'll humor you, though. In 10 years, I would really love for Abundant Minds to be the largest demand response grid resource in the Pacific Northwest. So when it comes to ensuring that the grids that serve everybody's homes and businesses have a reliable source of energy, part of that equation is making sure that if transmission gets clogged or there's not enough generation, that you have flexible loads that can turn off at any time to make sure that power still goes to the end user.
Right.
And Texas has been a great proving ground for this, and there have been lots of stories about winter storms and Texans curtailing gigawatts of power so that homes and hospitals could power through winter storms. And we haven't seen the same kind of programs in the Pacific Northwest. There's a few, but they're still being built out, and they're not quite as robust. And so if we can lead the charge of making sure that our grid, especially as it puts on renewables at a crazy pace, is reliable and safe far into the future, that would be a very worthy goal for our company to achieve.
So I'd like to know when you're coming to California, because you use the term reliable resource of electricity, which in California, if you know anything about us, we don't have a reliable resource of electricity here.
Well, yeah, I mean, I would say the main power provider is the one that's a bit unreliable.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But like here, we have our two municipal electric companies.
One in the North State. Yeah,
exactly. You know, one in Shasta Lake. I think we talked about that the other day. That's mostly hydro, and then the city of Redding is turning their turbines with the use of natural gas. So, not so reliant on PG&E, except for the distribution.
Right.
Distribution line.
I was kind of being snarky there.
Yes,
because,
of course.
Because
snark
there. Yeah, if you know anything about PG&E, you know, we can't rely on them for our infrastructure at all here in California, especially Northern California.
Yeah. We're fortunate that we're not subject to that.
Right.
Yeah.
But we do have, like you say, the city of Redding and Shasta Lake that have their own power grid, which we can hopefully maybe cap upon, however you want to put that, tap into, see what is available out there for us for the infrastructure.
Yeah. And I think, too, just obviously our main grids all need a lot of work. And
I do
find peace, though, when I think about just miners and Bitcoiners in general, because I've just met some of just the smartest people in this. And just thinking that they're now going to be involved in these conversations with different officials and things, I'm like, together, we can both help each other and accomplish a lot more.
You know, Bo, the other day you had mentioned that when you were working in real estate, that was a pretty cool industry, but it's not something you got excited about waking up to every day. But, you know, just having this conversation here, I can imagine how exciting it is for you to be looking at the what is and the possibilities in Bitcoin mining.
My schooling was, in a word, about optimizing whatever you work on. And I didn't have any familiarity with energy grids before I got into the Bitcoin mining space. And once I came around to the fact that our grids need help, not just that, but the energy that goes into our grids, you know, something on the order of 30% of it is wasted.
Yes.
That was a really powerful statistic for me to realize that the narrative around wasting energy is poorly constructed and poorly founded. And if we could just find an economic way to use the energy that we already produce and voluntarily curtail, that we would unlock such an engine of prosperity for humanity. And I think it's going to unfold quickly. I think it's going to be almost disorienting to watch it happen in the context of these other very large and very slow-moving industries like the electric utilities. But it's such an obvious fit. It's absolutely a match made in heaven to integrate this energy resource with the existing way that we think about utilities. And even in the context of your local area, you know, we in Oregon at our utility, they don't own any generation resources. And so our impact on their utility is just increasing their ability to get better purchase terms. Whereas in your area, yes.
I hate to interrupt you, but we do need to go to a break. And can you go ahead and finish out that thought after the break? Unfortunately,
we have to pay
sponsors and stuff to do this. So if you hang with us, that would be great, and then continue.
It's a good cliffhanger.
Yeah. Well, hang it up right there. So with that, we are going to take a break. You are listening to Tokens Radio Show. We're on 1460 AM and 96.5 FM. And we'll be back in about 3 and pick this conversation up with Bo.
The National Wild Turkey Federation's 25th Annual Redding Chapter Hunting Heritage Banquet is Saturday, March 9th at the Shasta District Fairgrounds. To purchase tickets for the event, or if you would like more information, contact Candy Muse at 530-526-8350. That's 530-526-8350. Or online at nwtf.org/event. Sponsored by Johnny Morris Bass Pro Shops, Cabela's, Benelli, Hoyt Harness Company, La Crosse, Sportsman's Guide, and Tacticam.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Obtaining a California concealed weapons license will allow the licensed individual to transport a listed handgun in their vehicle or on their person in public. For application instructions, training, and other information, contact NFI at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
This is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
Town Hall News Brief. I'm Phoebe Johnson, your host, here with the latest local updates. Shasta County's Citizens Election Advisory Commission has recommended hand-counting ballots in future elections, conflicting with State Law AB 969, which sets standards for ballot processing. Supporters like Vice Chair Lisa Mashad aim to challenge the law, regaining local control over elections aligned with the Board of Supervisors' wishes. However, Commissioner Suzanne Bearmore scrutinized the recommendation, concerned about drawing further state intervention impeding local election administration. She believes collaboration with the Registrar of Voters' Office is essential. This issue symbolizes a broader debate over county versus state jurisdiction. While some seek upholding public trust through updated voting protocols, others prioritize self-governance and traditional processes. With another meeting on March 11th, this complex discussion continues balancing accessibility, security, and legitimacy around Shasta County elections. In other local government news, a shocking vote fulfilled a resident's vow. When Redding City Council surprised residents by voting
Tanessa Audette as 2024 mayor instead of Vice Mayor Mark Mazzano, resident Catherine McDonald promised legal action over alleged Brown Act violations. She has delivered. McDonald recently sued the city, Audette, and council members Jack Munns and Julie Winter for their decisive 3-2 vote. The lawsuit seeks to nullify Audette's selection and requests reasonable legal fees. Though Audette denies wrongdoing, McDonald hopes to restore Mazzano through court intervention or another vote. This citizen uprising spotlights important issues around transparency and process in local government. Now the court must decide if rules were truly broken or if the council majority simply exercised its power, however unexpectedly. The outcome will set key precedents. A catchy wave of change is sweeping over Shasta County High Schools as students band together in the Friday Night Live program to say peace out to substance abuse. With clubs at 6 campuses and workshops on tap, these teens are raising awareness of drug and alcohol use. Quote, "We explain why students should avoid risky behaviors instead of just saying, don't do it," says the executive director. From leading mentoring sessions to advocating for policies, the students take active roles. Quote, "It's cool to promote sober living and mental health awareness," says club president Jasmine Saley. This youthful energy is creating ripples of hope for healthy futures in Shasta County. In closing, no child is safe from fentanyl's deadly grasp. One tiny mistake with this lethal drug kills instantly. Rich or poor, jock or artist, honor student or rebel, DEA agent Rocky Heron is on a mission to warn Shasta County before we lose another precious young life. For the second straight year, Heron presented cautionary tales, real stories of overdose deaths right here in our community. His goal? Change attitudes and empower youth to say no, resisting the pull of drugs. Heron says talk early and often at home about the grim realities of fentanyl, meth, and more. Schools can only do so much. Parents and guardians, your children's very survival depends on you. Have the tough talks. Visit RockyHeron.com to view the presentation online. Our kids are worth fighting for. Thank you for listening to your Town Hall Brief. Don't forget to vote in the primary elections next Tuesday. Become part of the conversation at Shasta Lake Town Hall on Facebook or at Town Hall News on X, formerly Twitter.
And we're back. Well, before we went to break, we were having great conversation with Bo, and he was right in the middle of getting something out there, and we kind of hung him up there. And so, go ahead. Take us off the cliff there, Bo.
It was a perfect break, really, because we were getting into the Shasta County-specific stuff. I wanted to start talking about what this means for Shasta County and how you guys could integrate this into your local utility. And so what I was starting out with is that in Cascade Locks, our existing site, they don't own any generation resources. And so they are only a more effective buyer of energy because we co-located there. In your location, in your area, I know that both of the utilities serving that county have their own generation resources, whether through hydro or wind projects. I believe one of the wind projects that's owned by these utilities is not far from where I live or from our site, as well as some distributed solar. And so your utilities are unique in the sense that they already own generating assets that they may not be getting the highest and best use out of. So typically, when a utility owns generating assets, if they generate more energy than they sell to their retail consumers, they have to sell that energy back to the grid. And I'm not sure exactly what the numbers are for your utility, but I know that the retail sellback is about 6 cents per kilowatt hour. And I would expect that the utility selling their own energy back is probably no more than 10 cents usually. And so typically, it's not a very effective proposition, especially when you're dealing with intermittent resources like wind and solar. And so the way that Bitcoin mining could potentially help a utility that's already got its own generating resources is that instead of sending your energy back to the grid where you may get 6 to 10 cents in revenue, current high efficiency Bitcoin miners are outputting anywhere between 15 and 30 cents per kilowatt hour. Mm. So it's a huge difference just in terms of raw numbers, but in the context of a utility, it makes a massive difference because typically they're trying to finance projects like grid extensions, new infrastructure, new distribution lines, or any kind of new generation, they want to write that down over about a 10 to 20 year period. And so if you suddenly put in a resource in this utilities mix that is not very expensive to start up and can generate something on the order of a 3 to 5 year payback on the same asset, it completely changes the game for that utility and gives them a very different way to grow and a very different way to serve their clients than to depend on grants or external funding or any of these other ways of expanding the service of their territory.
Yes, that's huge. What would, besides infrastructure improvements, what would that look like to the end user, to the citizens in the community?
So typically, and this was part of how we went into our project with Cascade Locks, is in many cases, by integrating a flexible buyer of energy, you can decrease the costs for every other consumer that relies on that utility to provide service. And so it's not in 100% of cases. I don't want to say that it's the panacea for everybody's high rate problems. Right. But in many cases, especially if your utility owns generation resources, integrating this optionality is a way that problem can be solved and that you can offer lower prices to your consumers without hollowing out the internal financial health of the utility.
That would be huge. I mean, we often hear about that up here anyway. The rates are generally going up on everything, mm-hmm. and gas, electric, water especially. And that would be music to many people's ears just to hear just a little bit of a reduction would be welcome.
Yeah, like we were talking, you know, during the break, you had mentioned the 30% before we went to break. And I was like, well, wouldn't it be nice if the people knew about that, because it's like driving down the road and throwing 30% of your money out the window, you know, that you don't realize that you're throwing out the window. Yeah. You think you're getting a bargain because you don't have the knowledge of it.
You know, our city electrical manager had mentioned something about that during a council meeting, and Bo, thank you for putting it out there, because the way it was described at a meeting is just like, that's just how it is.
Yeah, you just accept it. That's the way it's always been, and that's the way it's always going to be.
So when they were talking about wind energy, and that if we can't find a way to use it, it's just going to go away. It's just like, you just hit the nail on the head, but the way it's conveyed to the public, it's like, hey, this is just the way it is, because they're not looking at something like this as a solution.
Well, the problem that for utilities, and you know, I don't want to badmouth them, because they solve a very complex problem for
sure.
us. But the problem that they have is that they have to build out capacity for the highest load day. So, mm-hmm. for example, the Reading Electric Utility, highest load day is, I think, about 40 megawatts. But for most of the time, the system's only using about 20 or 25. And so these utilities are spending money to build capacity and build infrastructure for loads that almost never happen, or they take years to happen. And so they're constantly playing this game of, how do I allocate capital to develop new service for my customers, knowing that it's going to be a very long time before I get paid mm-hmm. back if I have to depend on population growth or industry growth in order for that equipment to be used. And so the problem that Bitcoin mining solves, and the reason why it's such a beautiful match between the two entities, is that now you have a flexible consumer of energy that can make sure that your equipment that you just spent hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars on to amortize over 10 to 20 years is used fully as soon as it starts up and as soon as it has capacity, you can put a Bitcoin mine on it. And the beautiful thing about the way that most people set up their Bitcoin mines and the way that we do is that they're highly scalable and highly modular. So if the city grows into that load and ends up using all of it, it's not that challenging to remove a portion of it and just adapt the facility to the needs of the utility. Mm-hmm. So especially when there's a public-private partnership or the utility owns its own data centers, for example, there's so much flexibility in making sure that they can both expand their service and do so in a reliable and financially responsible way.
That's huge.
Yeah, it is.
Have you ever encountered where, and I think this is just coming from an unawareness, if you will, where the energy, or I should say the electrical municipality, might feel as though they're a bit monopolistic, if they will, and they might feel threatened by optimizing power generation?
Different utilities are more open-minded than others, and I think it comes down to what problem you're trying to solve. And some utilities don't believe that they have a problem. It's the way that things have run for years. It's, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Right.
Many of the problems that I think we're going to see with grids have not yet come to pass. Mm. And so we're still in the very early stages of people recognizing that there is even a problem to solve. Just like the climate change conversations, it's very challenging to talk about a problem that people are describing as being 10 to 30 years out in the future. It's hard for people to wrap their heads around it. And the same problem exists within grids, that this is large, long-term infrastructure that has been run the same way for decades and, for the most part, has been very reliable. And only recently, when we started adding on new renewable capacity and load has started growing in certain places, has it become clear that there's a need for change.
Right.
And again, I just think we're really early in that process, and it's more about education than anything else.
Right.
Yeah, we've had some conversation about that here in the local community about the all of the electric vehicles and not enough places to power up. And so then the question came about, is, gosh, can our grid handle it?
Right.
What's going to happen? Will we just turn off the recharging stations to supply the load to the households? I mean, that was a question that came up in the council meeting, and it was an interesting question about, and there was no answer given on how that would be handled.
Yeah, what's the priority of how they're going which way they're going to throw the switch?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I guess that grid is on the minds of people, but like you say, it's so far out in the future that maybe we'll just deal with it when the problem really exists. That might just be the mindset. Well,
it's unfortunate that that's how it is, but most often that's how change occurs, is that something breaks and people become aware of it.
Right, when they feel a little pain. I want to just kind of, take a left turn, Clyde, so to speak. I have a question about having, and this is something that has come to our attention many times about the having and the mining system and how that all works. How do you feel about that, Bo, with the halving coming right around? I mean, when you were asked, go out 10 years, we're going to have a couple halvings within that 10-year period. How do you think that affects the mining, pros, cons, whatever?
Michael Saylor has recently been calling this next 10-year period the Bitcoin gold rush.
Yeah, I tend
to agree with that perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that I feel about my business, at least, is that over the next 10 years, we're going after the everything but the last 1% of supply.
Right.
And so this is the time to kick it into gear. If you believe that Bitcoin is going to be around for a generation or many generations, then you'd be slapping yourself if you didn't take advantage of this next decade period. And so at least for this upcoming halving, I'm happy to say that our company is very confident, our clients are very confident. The halving is something that is known, it's predictable, and so if you aren't preparing for it, I would say it's your fault. We like to be extremely prepared. So we're happy about the way that our fleet efficiency is looking going into the halving, and our clients are all feeling the same way. And everybody is prepared for there to be volatility, too, because that's the one thing that is constant, is a halving brings in a lot of volatility and a lot of movement.
Yeah.
And so if you can mentally, at least as a miner, just put your earmuffs on and go and walk outside and not pay attention for a little while, I think history has told you that that is the best way to play the cycle around the halving. But far into the future, you've got to be really a good business in order to survive considering the halvings that are coming up in the future. And so whether it's by performing demand response or diversifying your income by helping utilities with demand response or, you know, having additional uses for your heat, finding other processes that you can do in addition to Bitcoin mining to diversify your business, you know, the businesses that are not creative are not going to make it through the next couple cycles.
Oh, absolutely.
And the energy world is so much more competitive than the Bitcoin mining world has been to date. And I think we're going to see that over the course of the next few years.
I've got a question here. It's in the chat. Just wanted to ask. So you have an individual who is interested in Bitcoin mining, doesn't really know how to go about it. Your company offers an opportunity for them to subscribe to work with Abundant Minds to mine. Is that correct?
Absolutely. So we do several different things, but our main business includes miner sales to customers as well as co-location hosting. So we'll host people's miners in our facility, and they just pay us for electricity and IT service. In that, we are integrating repair services, consulting, strategic planning, you know, one-on-one education, and ways that we can make sure that people who may be sophisticated investors in other fields but don't know anything about Bitcoin mining can become very competent decision makers in a short time. And that was one thing that was lacking for me when I first got into this industry, was a string of bad experiences with seemingly no support. And I'm really happy to have found a community and resources that help me to be successful nowadays. But for the people just getting into this, I think there's still a huge need to get the process, to get really comfortable with the process, and to know that you can trust the operator that's holding onto your equipment. Because even if you just have a single machine, you're trusting someone with $2,000 to $5,000 worth of your hard-earned money and hoping that they'll take care of it.
Right.
And the feeling of not having it taken care of is one of the more painful experiences that you can go through.
Anytime it comes to your money and you feel that, it's not a good feeling, you know?
If you get a new miner and then 2 weeks later, oops, this is no longer working.
But I like that. It's kind of like Bitcoin mining for dummies. You know, they have all those different guides to help you get through different things. You know, there's some of us that we need a little extra
help.
Yeah, exactly.
And handholding.
Yeah, I like it.
You know, the change for me in 2021 of having researched Bitcoin more deeply, like even though I had years in the industry and had some experience, it wasn't until I had the time set aside and the framework to build out conviction and understanding of what I was owning. Mm-hmm. And so if we can shortcut that for people and not make them wait 5 years to understand what they're potentially holding on to, I think that's a service to people. And really, in our industry, it's such a communication barrier is the main thing that we need to solve, is getting people to understand what they're looking at. And I think the more helpful people that you have educating, the better it's all going to go for people.
Okay. I couldn't agree more. That's such a valid point. You're right. Until you actually sit down and have the time to study and understand what it is that you're holding, that personally, that's just when it became that much more exciting.
Mm-hmm.
The education is still exciting to me.
It is.
Every little step, every day, it's like, ooh, yeah.
Just like today, we're learning quite a bit.
Yeah, we are. It's pretty cool.
But we have a few more minutes left before the show is over, and wanted to give you the space to talk about some things that you feel that we should cover today. Floor is yours.
You know, guys, I don't have anything really other than telling people, you know, you can follow us on Twitter at Abundant Minds, and you can book a call with my team at AbundantMinds.com. And we'd love to hear from people that are listeners of the show. But as far as content, you know, I really love fielding questions. If you guys have any additional, they don't have to be about mining, but I'm just curious what's top of mind for you.
Oh my gosh.
That kind of, we've got some questions. We weren't quite ready for that. Do you have one?
Yeah, one that's kind of bubbling up. And thank you for letting us know where we can find you. And just anyone listening, their website's pretty cool. And you can read a little bit more about
them. Find them on X as well.
Yeah, and sign up for a consultation there. I looked at your Twitter account and you just seem like such a freedom maxi, which is great and things. So I'm just wondering, who are some of the people that you've learned from, or what books have you read? What are some resources that you recommend? Doesn't necessarily have to be about mining, but just Bitcoin in general.
Sure. A very formative work for me was mm-hmm. Price of Tomorrow by Justice, and that was an eye-opener. Another great book that has been recommended often, but to me, when I opened it, felt like those scenes in the movies when someone's uncovering a prophecy, was The Sovereign Individual.
Mm-hmm.
Was a really formative book. And then another that's harder to get your hands on lately is the PhD thesis for Jason Lowry.
Sophomore.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I think that, we all love that book.
We all have copies.
I think so.
It's a prerequisite to be on the show.
You know, it's interesting that he's just surfaced again.
Yes.
He's been dark for a while. It's good to have him back.
I haven't seen anything long form from him lately, but, that work alone was enough to really change the way that I think about things.
Yes, indeed. And I take it you must listen to Michael Saylor quite a bit, because you did reference him, and he's one of our favorites, too. We like a lot of the information that he puts out, which helps us get educated and excited about more things.
I consider him.
I would credit Michael Saylor's decision with MicroStrategy to start allocating part of their balance sheet as being one of the beacons that lit up and got me interested again in Bitcoin, mm-hmm. because that was the first show me, don't tell me that you really believe in this from such a large company.
True.
He's been very, very influential on me. I love the Saylor series from Robert Greenlove. I don't think you could spend a better 25 hours.
Exactly.
Except if you're mining, no.
Until we're mining, till next time we're mining.
I think Michael Saylor is the number one cheerleader for Bitcoin, and admire him and just appreciate everything he's done. I agree with you. He's the one that started investing in his company's treasuries, and next thing you find out that you have large insurance companies doing some of the same, and it's just kind of caught on.
I have a question, and it's one question we ask a lot of our guests, is did you dabble in other things before you dabbled in Bitcoin?
He said he had Ethereum, I think.
Yes.
I like to tell people is that I probably, maybe not today, because we've had a few really good weeks. I think you guys mm-hmm. know that February was the largest green candle that we've seen in Bitcoin's history.
Right, yeah.
But maybe before this month, I would have told people I've actually probably made more money in Ethereum to date. Mm-hmm. That was the early interesting thing to me.
Mm-hmm.
And when the proof of stake shift was locked in and it was coming, that was the signal to me that there's nothing for me to find here. There's nothing of value for me to discover here anymore. And if anything is going to succeed, or if anything has already succeeded, it's Bitcoin.
Yeah. Yes. I have to agree. That shifted a lot of people when they went to proof of stake.
Well, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
So anyway, we got about, a minute and a half. Do you want to put out there again how to get a hold of you, your website, things like that before we go?
Absolutely. So you can follow us at Abundant Minds on Twitter. That's our handle. We have a podcast coming out with Dennis Porter probably in the next few days that'll be released on Twitter as well as our YouTube channel.
Nice.
You can get in touch with us directly at AbundantMinds.com. Fill out the form and let us know that you came from Token's Radio Show. And we're also going to be exhibiting and doing a site visit at the Bitcoin is for Everyone conference May 22nd in Portland. The following day, that Thursday the 23rd, we'll have a site visit at our Cascade Lock site. So if anybody wants to come out and see what mining looks like in person, we'd love to have you.
And that's March 23rd?
That is May 22nd and 23rd in Portland, Oregon.
Wow. All right. Well, we want to thank you so much for coming on and spending the time with us and sharing all the different information that you did today. That was great.
Let's do it again if you'd like to, Bo. We'd love to have you back.
Thank you so much for having me, and I would love to be back on. It would be an honor.
Thank you. All right. Well, I think that pretty well. Are we ready to call it good?
Oh, we got ten more seconds.
We got 10 seconds.
All right, then before we get cut off by the music.
Yeah.
You could find Abundant Minds on X.com, at Abundant Minds. And, gosh, we so appreciate having you here. It was an absolute pleasure speaking with you. We're very grateful.
Yeah. And, again, we'll be talking to him soon.
Have a good
day,
Bo.
Everybody have a great time. Thanks again, Bo. Appreciate it. Yoshi Nakamoto, that's the name I...